Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzewski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Jean-Claude Brizard, President and CEO of Digital Promise, a global, nonpartisan nonprofit focused on accelerating innovation in education. Jean-Claude is a former senior advisor to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, former chief executive of Chicago Public Schools, and a 21-year veteran of the New York City Department of Education. Born in Haiti, Brizard was recently honored by the Carnegie Corporation of New York as one of America's great immigrants for his contributions to education and democracy. Jean-Claude, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Greg, Ryan, it's so good to be here.
We feel like the lucky ones, and there are 100 places where we could start. And we're going to start with an op-ed you wrote, Jean-Claude, for the Hechinger Report, because its lead, we think, is both counterintuitive and provocative, as many great leads are. And the lead said this: the pandemic's disruption to America's schools was a mere dress rehearsal for what's to come. To which I go, So what do you know that the rest of us don't know?
So I don't think there is anything that I know or have a crystal ball into. Just frankly, I've been watching what has been happening around the world. And I was listening to a show on, I think it was BBC, maybe a summer and a half ago, about heat waves and storms in India and the fact that schools were closed there for weeks. At the same time, you know, having been at the Gates Foundation and listening to the global health folks, this pandemic was not a surprise to anyone there. And a lot of things could come in the future. I think Bill Gates himself have talked about this. So when you look at the kinds of, whether it be a 2 or 3 day disruption to education because of a snowstorm, or frankly, what may come to us in climate change and or perhaps another pandemic, I think it's time to figure out ways of making sure that access to pedagogy, access to curriculum, access to teaching and learning does not stay within the four walls of a school. That, I think, was the push around making sure technology is sort of, it becomes a foundation from which we actually launch this kind of work.
And that, of course, is exactly what Digital Promise sets out to do. So for our listeners who might not be familiar, can you tell us a bit about the organization you lead? What does Digital Promise stand for? What does it do?
It's an amazing organization. So Digital Promise initially was a vision that, you know, former heads of NBC Television, PBS Television, Carnegie Corporation of New York, FCC, you name it, two individuals in particular had for the use of technology and media in American lives. So fast forward to 2008, the organization was approved by the U.S. Congress as part of the Higher Education Act of 2008 under George W. Bush, and subsequently launched by President Obama and Secretary of Education Arne Duncan in 2011. We are now an independent organization from government about 4.5 years now. But the idea was to build this massive research and technology shop leveraging on practitioners' work to really move education forward. So now we say we work along three circles: research, learning science research primarily, practice, and technology innovation. We are in 300 districts in the US working with practitioners and in 27 countries around the world.
So if there's a central theme to the work at Digital Promise, it's finding ways to make the technology that's available to us, whether that's a device or AI or something else, to make that technology positive and constructive and equitable for learners. So can you give us some concrete examples of the work that you do? For example, Digital Promise created something called the Learner Variability Navigator. Like, what's that? And what are some other things?
Sure, it's a great construct. I would argue in the Learner Variability Navigator also highlights the fact that another thing we bring to the sector is one of learning science and science of development research. So the LVN is a platform, it's a technology platform that makes actionable and usable the learning sciences to practitioners, to product developers. It leans on literacy, on mathematics, and really understanding how kids learn and making sure that it is accessible to the folks who are developing education technology products, as well as folks who are designing curriculum, and frankly, for teachers, principals, and school superintendents who are leveraging, again, learning sciences to make that actionable for the folks in the classroom doing work. For us, a foundation for bringing that kind of technology to bear is closing what we call the digital learning gap. And frankly, what that means is not just devices and access to the internet, but it's also helping educators understand how to use technology in the classroom. The biggest supporter of that kind of work, frankly, is the Verizon Corporation, who supports this right now with nearly 500,000 kids across the country as a foundation for helping others understand how to do this kind of work across the U.S.
Speaking of closing gaps, Jean-Claude, I feel like when ChatGPT came out at the end of 2022, it took the vast majority of the world, myself included, by surprise. But if you go back, this is something you've been speaking about, writing about for years now, and you've written that when it comes to AI, there's a massive opportunity here to really begin to close gaps around inequity by, for example, helping teachers create lessons and practices that are responsive to children's unique and individual needs. I'm curious about how and maybe where you're seeing this play out. Are you seeing educators leverage that opportunity yet?
I'm seeing educators beginning to understand perhaps the power that is now becoming more and more available to all of us. One thing we've said, as you outlined, is that AI in education is not new. I believe it first appeared in 1975. So 50 years AI has been in education. Yes, it's grown like hockey stick in the last couple of years. We run an AI institute here at Digital Promise, thanks to the National Science Foundation. And in that, what we try to do is bring together practitioners, researchers, and technologists to find solutions that practitioners are asking and begging for. Let me give you a quick story on this. When I was a new teacher in New York, I was teaching physics. The graphing calculator was seen as a cheating tool and was banned on the New York State exams. Fast forward a few years, it became a requirement on the exam. And one thing changed on the test. The line that I remember very clearly was, "Show your work." That by itself elevated the assessment to a different level and brought in the technology, the graphing calculator, as a tool to be used in the classroom. We see, for example, the ChatGPT or the AI as exactly the same thing. Initially, and unfortunately, we saw school districts banning AI in schools. And for us, frankly, that was a bit of a terrifying moment, because what it said to me was that the kids who would not get access to this tool would be the poor kids in our poor communities, because the kids who are middle class or wealthy will get access to the technology. They have it at home. They're going to use it. So what we've been espousing are things like, let's elevate pedagogy, let's elevate assessment to a place where it becomes a tool versus, frankly, one that could help a child cheat or get the answer. So I'm bullish when it comes to AI, but what it means, for example, for looking at data and making data usable and actionable for teachers, really elevating assessment and pedagogy to a place where young people are leveraging the tools and technology to really move further. It's also a way to get poor kids to understand things like computational thinking and how that can prepare them for the future of work. And one great example of that is watching work in Talladega County, Alabama. Talladega has computational thinking work integrated in the curricula across every grade from pre-K all the way to 12th grade. I saw pre-kindergartners building bird housing and talking about computational thinking. I saw kids in honors English in 12th grade studying Shakespeare and talking about computational thinking. That for me is the ways in which that we need to figure out ways of making the tool and technology really accessible for young people to prepare them for the future of work.
Accessible and vibrant. This is Greg Baer along with Ryan Rudzeski. We're talking with Jean-Claude Brizard, President and CEO of Digital Promise. Jean-Claude, you were born in Haiti. Your parents fled political persecution there, and you eventually joined them in New York City when you were age 12. And you've said this about your parents, quote, that they sacrificed to get us to America, and I will always work to honor their legacy and the gift of opportunity that they afforded me. It is my fondest hope that someday every child in America will grow up with that same sense of hope. When you think about that hope today, what does it look like? What do you hope for every child?
So, I mean, I was born of two parents. One was a school principal, one was a secondary school teacher. Both had to flee Haiti because of a despot. They were about to be murdered, to be frank and to be blunt. My grandfather, who was a conductor, was imprisoned for 6 years in the 1960s because he dared to use his bully pulpit in front of an orchestra to talk about the atrocities of a despot named Papa Doc. So my parents escaped. My mom got a visa into the U.S. My dad ended up in North Africa. made his way from Algeria to Senegal, then to Paris, France, and then to the US. So for 6 years, we were separated as a family. I didn't really know my parents. I asked my mom before he died what it was like to leave three young kids behind. This is something she refused to talk about, even when she was dying, because again, it was too painful for her. I remember the stories of social justice. I remember the tenacity that my grandparents and my parents had in pushing to bring the voices of those who were silenced to bear. I've never forgotten what they taught me and made me understand that my job was to give back. So when I came to the US, even when I was in Haiti without them, through letters and through correspondences, we all of my siblings and I understood what the work was for us moving forward. So my siblings were teachers. My sister is a social worker. We really live by this understanding that the opportunity ceiling is unlimited. And because my president was always Black, because my educators, my teachers, principals look like me, I had role models to follow. It has been my goal in my work since I was a school teacher in New York City to help my students understand that the opportunity ceiling is unlimited and that if you cannot get through the front door, try the window. If the window is closed, try the back door. By any means necessary, get inside. And for me, what that meant, and I said this at every graduation when I was a school principal, please do not make this your last graduation. And what that meant for me was keep pushing forward. Keep being educated. No one can ever take away from you the education you actually are getting, and always have this idea of hope. And I really live by the Gates Foundation's motto of impatient optimism. I am an optimist at heart, and I believe things will always work as long as we push and have the tenacity and understanding of how it actually happens. That is what I do, even in my first teaching job in New York, which was at Rikers Island, a prison in New York City, and I talked to my young folks about this idea of preparing for the future. The future is always bright. Just keep finding different ways of getting there without hope, frankly, what else exists. So my own experience, my parents' experience primarily, taught me over and over again that hope, again, combined with tenacity and work, will get to where you want to get to. And last thing I'll say on this very quickly, also when I became a superintendent, talked quite a bit about what I read in Frederick Douglass, was said that, I'm going to paraphrase a bit, that my dreams begin to come true when I begin to pray with my feet. So my dreams begin to come true when I begin to pray with my feet. That I always tell people, it's not just praying. It's not just hoping. It's about work as well too.
Jean-Claude, speaking of opportunity and tenacity and work and a limitless ceiling, you're also a pilot, correct?
Yes, I am.
What inspired you to take up flying?
It's a great question. I have a fear of heights.
Oh, I do too.
And I'm not a pilot.
But you know, I thought that would cure that fear if I were to do that. I took a flight challenge many years ago, and what it did instead was turn me on to the grandeur, the beauty, and frankly, the different perspective you have in the air. It's a different platform because you're watching the earth, you're watching society from a different vantage point. It helps you see how magnificent this world is and that whatever challenges that you're facing on the ground tends to disappear. First of all, as a pilot, you have to focus. You don't have time to daydream. So it has been my escape for many, many years now. But again, fundamentally, when you see the world from that perspective, it just changes your outlook and your view. So it remains a passion to this day.
Well, from the skies back down to Digital Promise. On the website for Digital Promise, Jean-Claude, you share a quote from Peter Senge, who reminds us what it means to be human, that if we stop learning, we stop growing. So we're curious, what are you learning these days?
You know, I'm reading a great book right now. I forgot the exact title, but God, Human, Machines, and Animal. I think it are the four letters, the four words on the title. And what it's doing for me, it's combining sort of humanity with a machine learning or AI through the lens of a dog. This author purchased that was an artificial dog. But the conversation is quite philosophical, but also leans on technology. So I keep learning, one, about the power of technology to the leapfrog inequality. And I think we have great opportunities here. Also, I'm learning quite a bit about what it means to lean on our collective humanity. I led a retreat for my entire staff in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that was the premise of the conversation with about 200 some white folks in talking about what do we mean by collective humanity, transcending equity, you know, DEI principles. what does it mean for all of us to bring our full humanity to a conversation and have perhaps a collective outlook for us as a people? And what that means, frankly, for the workflow and the goals we have here at Digital Promise. We have these amazing population level goals here. And the discussion was to really achieve these over the next 8 to 10 years, we need to fully appreciate and understand what all of us bring to the table, not just in the US, right? It's a global conversation to understand what we see in Israel, in Palestine, in South Africa, in Southeast Asia, in South America, in Haiti, right? And what that means for all of us and the work that we do in the US. So to me, this idea of collective humanity is an important one. And for us to lean on that first and foremost, then we can get to the work that we need to get done to make sure all people are thriving and succeeding.
Jean-Claude, we've been doing this little experiment on Remaking Tomorrow recently, in which we do the Remaking Tomorrow lightning round. So I'm going to ask you just a couple of rapid-fire questions, and you just let us know the first thing that pops to mind. Sound good?
Sure. That sounds like fun.
All right. Most profound moment as an educator?
Rikers Island as a teacher.
Most profound moment as a pilot?
Learning to learn to fly in instrument conditions and the beauty that I saw beneath the clouds.
Technology that excites you the most?
Right now, it's artificial intelligence.
Technology that scares you the most?
Right now, it's artificial intelligence.
Your dream flight path, where do you start, where do you finish, and where do you stop in between?
Oh, wow. I would love to be able to fly every corner of the U.S., and stop at places I've never been to and have lunch or dinner with a family somewhere.
Well, I hope you stop in Pittsburgh when you do that. Jean-Claude, Yes. How can people find out more about the work you're doing?
You know, we have a fantastic website, digitalpromise.org. Please subscribe. We also publish quite a bit on LinkedIn and the work that we are doing. So please, those two places are really amazing to get information.
Jean-Claude, before we let you go, we have just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I'm on the board of EL Education, and I've known them for 30 years, and I paraphrase what they push. Please be crew and not passengers. Be crew, not passengers in the work, in the effort. Roll up your sleeves and get involved. It's the only way, frankly, we're going to get this work done.
Thanks so much to Jean-Claude Bizard, President and CEO of Digital Promise. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.